You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a writer and broadcaster specialising in food and science. We're recording here on location at Food Matters Live at Excel, and this podcast is all about meeting the innovators. Now, the food tech industry is one of the most fast-paced and exciting sectors, and it's evolving at an amazing rate. Now, this podcast will shed light on the disruptors reshaping the future of food and our food system and helping to secure a sustainable future. Now, we've got two fantastic innovators here. We have Dr. Sandhya Sriram. She is the CEO and co-founder of Shiok Meats.
Hi.
And we've got Tom Moran, CEO of Protifarm.
Nice to meet you.
Now, we're going to start off with Sandhya. And now, just tell us, just explain, lay a bit of groundwork for us. What are the challenges that your business is looking to solve?
Right. So our business, actually, Shiok Meats is based out of in Singapore, in Asia. And what we're doing is cell-based crustaceans. So shrimp, crab, and lobster made from stem cells instead of killing the animal. And I can start off with the reasons as to why I started this company about 15 months ago, more personal than anything else, actually. I'm actually a vegetarian by birth and by living, I guess, for the ethical and sustainable reasons of behind it. So when I first decided that I want to start a cell-based clean seafood company, the thought process behind it was about 4 years ago, I visited some of the biggest shrimp farms in Thailand and Vietnam. And I've never eaten shrimp in my life. And
describe the scene. Why was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, literally. So I've never eaten shrimp, and I go there and I see tons of shrimp being reared in sewage water, literally. Then they are dunked into huge vats of bleach and antibiotics to be cleaned off and then sent off to consumers like us. So after seeing that, I would never put a shrimp in my mouth, even though I've never eaten shrimp before that. So when I literally decided to start Shiok Meats, I'm like, yes, let's do shrimp, because that is totally disgusting. And there are no YouTube videos of this. You have seen slaughterhouses, you've seen, you know, cows and pigs being slaughtered and, you know, cruelty on them, but nobody's ever seen shrimp, crab, and lobsters this way. So that was kind of the birth of Shiok Meats. And along those lines, when I was doing a bit more reading, it was found out that shrimps are individually injected with antibiotics and also hormones to make them look bigger, because bigger the shrimp, better the price. There is slave laborers involved behind de-shelling shrimp, which is required for the Western world. I think all of these shouldn't be associated with food. And the most disgusting five words, which is sewage water, heavy metals.
You got me there, actually. Yeah. You don't need any more words than that.
Heavy metals, microplastics, bleach, and antibiotics. I think they shouldn't be anywhere near food. And that's the reason Shiok Meats was started.
So it's a bit of a personal mission that kicked it off and then presumably shifts onto the business side.
Of course. I mean, it's a $40 billion industry. So I think the numbers made sense eventually to kind of disrupt. And nobody else was doing that, which is great. And when Kai, my co-founder, and I decided on shrimps, we were like, yeah, let's just go for it. And it's worked out for the best.
Fantastic. Okay. Before we delve further into that, let's go to Tom. Now, Tom Moran, tell us all about Protifarm. Why did you start doing this?
Well, maybe we're also a little bit in shrimps, but then in land shrimps. at Protifarm, we're riding actually the wave of an increasing demand for more sustainable food, but also nutritious food. At Protifarm, we believe that people need to eat more effective, and not only for their body, but also for the planet and everything that lives on that planet. And we believe that insects can contribute to that and are an amazing solution. From a sustainability point of view, as all the things that the doctor was mentioning on are not applicable to insects, because we do large industrial indoor farming. So no antibiotics, no chemicals, nothing, hardly any water used. We hardly use any land. But also nutritionally, they're very interesting. And people then often talk about protein. But insects are more than protein. They're vitamins, fibers, minerals, healthy fats. So, and I think an amazing solution in contributing to a more sustainable world.
So it's sort of environmental, nutritional, and yet business-related sort of set of of drivers for you to start the business?
Absolutely. I've worked for more than 10 years in plant-based alternatives. I was at the start of the big trend in Europe. Worked on several plant-based alternatives in different European countries, and that was already when it opened my eyes and I have this drive for more sustainable food. And when insects came on my path, I in the first place didn't understand it and then dived into it, and it makes so much sense. As okay. A lot of other alternatives as well.
Yeah. Now, okay. So you've both lighted on an industry which is emerging or possibly just beginning, really, when you started. There's not necessarily all of the consumers there. The technology is only just beginning.
Yeah, I think definitely for us, I think the belief of consumers and investors, first thing, I mean, we are a startup. We need to raise money to do this. The belief of investors saying that we can scale this business up to eventually yield them money. The next thing is the consumers, when you talk about meat that's grown not inside an animal or on an animal, it's actually from outside, from cells, they don't get it first thing. So you have to sell the vision behind it, sell the idea, and actually equate it to like IVF babies of sorts. And then they're like, ah, okay, that makes sense. Because an IVF baby is still a human being. You don't call that human being as a unnatural human being or whatever it is. These are cells taken out of a human being, and eventually the baby's made. So cell-based meats is typically that. And so it's a lot of, I would say, convincing, making people understand, educating rather than convincing, actually. It's putting it out there and being as transparent as you can be. You have to be transparent in this line of business, and you basically tell them, believe in the concept and tell them that this is the future. And then they're like, oh, it makes sense. I would actually go for that kind of a sustainable, no cruelty, ethical meat instead of eating a disgusting sewage grown shrimp, literally. And I should add, this shrimp, crab and lobster are actually insects. They're not sea animals. So we're all belonging to the same family.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Tom, you need some investment to get started. How do you convince investors that there will be a market for people to have these things when there hasn't been in the past? So not just that you're the right person to address the market, but that there will be a market there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we do that mainly by what our message in general is, and that's reframing the message of insects. We're trying to be a company that sells ingredients made from insects. And when investors look at our business, they find it a little bit less difficult than what Sandhya is talking about, although they all talk about edible insects. And that is what a lot of people are talking about. And that's also how the message is mostly framed. In our opinion, it's about taking the nutrition outside this little species, unlocking it, taking the most valuable parts out of it and transforming them in recognizable ingredients.
And we're talking protein powders?
The protein powders, textured insect protein, oil, And that is so much more interesting. And then you see that also from investors, their eyes are opening. It's just a simple change of the message by saying you don't have to eat insects. You're eating nutrition taken from an insect, and we don't do any different from whether it's shrimps or traditional livestock or whatever. We also take parts of it and take the most valuable nutrition out of it.
Now, The whole concept of being a disruptor in the market, do you think is that a nonsense word now? I mean, it's used a lot because it sounds a little bit sexy, doesn't it? I'm a disruptor. Is that really what's going on? Or are you business people coming to an obvious conclusion of what you've seen and saying, I can make people, including myself and my investors, money from that?
No, I think where I come from, so Singapore is, yes, it's known for its tech entrepreneurship background and ecosystem and so on, but biotech food is still very, very new in that part of the world. So when Kai and I started Shiok Meats, everybody thought we were crazy. Mm-hmm. They're like two well-established stem cell scientists quitting their well-paid jobs to start a company that has no background research, has no IP. They just said they'll grow shrimp out of stem cells, and they don't even know whether they can do it, first of all. So when we started off, it was literally like Asian investors were like, you're going to fail. I'm like, okay, thank you for that. And then, you know, the investors from the Valley, of course, believed in us and made us, you know, where we are right now. But I think it also comes to the fact that we are inspiring future entrepreneurs to actually disrupt. I would say that word is actually good, definitely.
You, like
Asia.
The disruptive.
I like it. I like it in the sense that we are actually changing the usual context of just being in a well-paid job and getting a check every month, which is very Asian, actually. So for an Indian like me and a Singaporean like Kai to actually break out of that shell and tell that, okay, 12 months, we'll survive without a salary. Let's see what happens. And then if we can't do it, we can always go back to our jobs. I mean, we do have our degrees with us, our experience with us. But if we don't try, we'll never know. So that's what it is. Yeah.
So Tom, is being an innovator an uphill struggle? Or is everyone struggling out there in business, and that's and you just have a different
I truly believe that. I mean, everybody is struggling, but if you're trying to do something as innovative as we are doing, then that struggle is sometimes bigger. And the reason is that we're not trying to be disruptive all the time. We're trying to also help people in not to have changed their habits too much by offering them ingredients that can be incorporated in their in daily diets. So also in the way we produce our ingredients, we try to stay also close to forms of traditional manufacturing. Although the biggest struggle and the biggest part of change and being disruptive is our extreme combination of technology and biology. So if you're trying to treat more than 8 billion insects in one farm in a proper way and do that fully automatic, that is a big struggle.
Do you think the food industry is a supportive place for innovators, or do you come across more barriers than doors that are open?
I can speak for Asia. I think the industry is definitely more open. Big corporates are actually looking to invest, support smaller startups like us, eventually with the aim of course, acquiring us or seeing how they can actually buy our technology, license our technology, I would say. The reason being the big corporates have reached their end of innovation. They don't have the innovative team in-house. So what they're looking at is technologies that they can actually take up or absorb and see how it fits into their product line. So for sure, I mean, we have been approached by some of the biggest disgusting shrimp farms to see actually if they can use our technology, because they themselves identify that the way they're doing it is completely unsustainable. Yeah. So we are more than happy to work with them. So it's not competition, or it's not like, oh my God, a big company is trying to buy us out or anything like that. It's actually seeing how our technology can fit into their product lines.
Now, both of your companies are about sustainability overall. Is the drive for this coming from customers? Is it coming from legislation? Is it coming from just desperate need? Or is it your own moral crusade? Or is it something else?
It's all four?
No, but I think it's coming from an end consumer that is also struggling. But it's not coming from legislation, unfortunately, although not in Europe. I think it's quite restrictive, not always easy. I think the laws in place are good and trying to help and guide the end consumer, but very complex and bureaucratic.
Especially in the insect world, where recent regulations have cut down on the amount of different insects that can be put into the food chain.
Yeah, well, that's only one part. I mean, novel food, as legislation in Europe in general, that is the biggest hurdle. Mm. And that process should take you approximately 18 months. And I think we are a front runner and one of the first. But we're almost 2 years on our way, and we're still not there. And I think those things are a very big threat to innovative companies like ours, because the innovation is there. And we need to bring it to market. We need to do that properly, I understand. And that's why good legislation is very important. But that needs to be on with a certain speed.
You're being very polite about this. Are you angry about regulation and legislation holding you back? Really, is that bubbling below your surface?
No, because in one way, I think that legislation is very, very important. I mean, what we have seen on scandals on the market, and I've worked for the largest fast movers in the world, and I know that they also are living upon those regulations, and they're doing a really great job, and that is very important. And disruptors in that way can also be a threat. So legislation is important, but the governments need to set up a way that speed up things. So otherwise, they kill the innovation, and people are not daring to bring new products to market.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to wind it up there. I just got one more question for both of you, and that is, what's the future? So what's your vision? Let's paint the paradisical version of the future. If everything goes according to your plan, what would you like to see in 10 years' time?
In 10 years' time, there should be no killing of animals. So actually, there will be a mix of plant-based, cell-based, and insect-based protein/meat out there. When you walk into a supermarket and you want to pick up a bag of shrimp, it will be shrimp that's made from cells, plants, or insects. Of course, I'd like it to be more cell-based, for sure. But if you want a shrimp that comes from a dead shrimp, you're actually going to pay 10 times more the price. So people would actually not go for it. So the premium meats would actually become meats that come from dead animals. And the normal meats that everyday people eat are going to be meats that are from food technology that we are doing right now.
Perfect. Okay. Tom, 10 years' time, in an ideal scenario, what's the world going to be like for you?
Well, for me, personal, as Protifarm, we probably will be managing quite some insect farms around the world that can be in license for other companies or our own farms. But also, I see a world in front of me that is more driven by a large part of innovative alternatives and. I think that's where it will go, and I think that the end consumer, in the end, find it difficult to change it, to change his behavior. So that won't change a lot, but the ingredients out of which the food is made, that will change, and that can go in many directions. And I support all those directions as long as it is bringing us to a better world.
Fantastic. So, Dr. Sandhya Shriram, CEO of Shiok Meats, and Tom Moorman, CEO of Protifarm. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Now I'm joined by Jamie Crummy, co-founder of Too Good To Go. How are you doing, Jamie?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me here today.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Now, can you just start off by giving us a brief explanation of Too Good To Go and how it works?
Sure. So Too Good To Go is a food waste initiative. And what we want to do is strive for a planet with no food waste. We have a mobile app which connects consumers with businesses who have surplus food for sale. So a really simple, accessible and fun way for people to fight food waste together. And how it works is a user logs onto the app, they'll see a food business, they purchase what we call a magic meal through the bag, through the app, and then collect it from the business at a specified collection window.
And you're a commercial organisation, you're not a charity. How are you going to make money from it?
Yeah, so that's correct. We are a profit for purpose. We're a social impact business. And what we do is we take a fee from each meal that's saved. So that allows us to grow and grow and save as many meals as we can. And thus, benefiting the planet as we go.
Now, you call yourself a social purpose organization. And that's a really interesting title. So you're combining a commercial imperative with a positive action that will benefit the environment, I guess, mm-hmm. or it benefit us at some level. Does that make it easier or harder for you to raise funding to start your business, do you think? I mean, I know you're just doing your business, so you can't talk for other people, but how have you found the process?
I think the great thing about doing something that has a social impact is it's a very attractive proposition to many people. So we've been very lucky with the amount of people that have wanted to get involved, because not only is it something that makes commercial sense and is growing at a rate at Knox, I mean, we're in 13 countries now, but it's also something that, has a huge environmental impact. So with that, And with that combination, we've been very lucky in the terms of the people that that's attracted.
And has it been difficult? Has it been an uphill struggle?
What, starting a food waste movement?
Kicking off the... I'm more interested in the company thing, but rather than the movement to start off with, if we talk about that. Is it hard pushing a company that... Do the people with money think, oh, you're a bunch of do-gooders. Am I going to get my cash back?
Well, again, we have a proven business model. Mm. You know, we're very lucky in the sense of the rate of growth that we've had, but that's not been without hard work. You know, in our short history of 3 and a bit years, you know, we've hit milestone after milestone.
Now, can you explain what those are?
Sure. So currently, we've hit an amazing milestone. So we now save 81,400 meals per day, which, for anyone who's quick at maths, is 1 meal per second.
That is awesome. So I had that.
Yeah. I was never great at math. But, you know, that there is something that we're immensely proud of. So, you know, by the time we probably finish this, you know, there'll be like several thousand meals will have been saved. And that equates to, you know, a huge amount of tons of CO2 emissions that haven't been wasted. So when we think of it like that, you know, that there is huge growth. You know, we're probably one of the, if not the fastest growing food technology business ever. When we're thinking about the impact we're having at the same time, that's just one of the most attractive things for anyone to work in, but also invest in.
Hmm. Now, you started off in Copenhagen.
We did, yes.
Why Copenhagen and not London, I wonder?
So some of my other co-founders are Danish, and I have a connection through one of my other co-founders. He's my best friend. His wife is Scandinavian as well. But when we look at Copenhagen and look at Denmark in particular, it is sort of the leading nation in terms of reducing food waste. The country itself is immensely sustainable. I think if you've ever been to Copenhagen or had the luxury of, you know, 60% of Danes are cycling to work, despite the fact that, you know, they're surrounded by snow. So that really shows an appetite and a mindset within the population to, you know, do something that's sustainable.
But what's interesting about that is if they are such a sustainable nation, shouldn't there be less opportunity for your company to work?
Sure.
Shouldn't you do better in the companies that are least sustainable in a way?
Well, you know, that's, we're going then deeper into food systems in general and global food systems. And that's one thing that we're trying to address, which is there is a fundamental flaw with our food systems across the world of food waste. You know, food waste is very much a global issue. So there isn't a part in the world which has no food waste. Unfortunately, with the way our food systems are structured and operate, food waste is inevitable at the time being. And what we're doing is trying to shift that mindset, disrupt that industry, and get people to, you know, rescue this food and start reducing food waste.
So tell us about your own journey to getting here. I mean, literally from why you got into this area, why, you know, you thought that you know, food tech would be somewhere for you to end up.
So I guess I have quite a unique journey in some sense, but then in other words, I just think it's completely normal. So when people know that I was a lawyer, was a human rights lawyer, the last thing I was doing, I was out in the Calais jungle, you know, working for refugee rights. And they're like, well, how do you end up sort of then starting a business which is all about fighting food waste? And for me, there's, you know, the synergies is right there. It's about having an impact. It's about having a purpose and doing something that's right. Now, you know, I'm not going to stand here and say that I'm a, you know, food waste warrior since day dot. No, I was actually the opposite. And it wasn't until sort of like 2013 that I became aware of the scale and gravity of the issue of food waste. You know, I was working for an events organization where I was seeing, you know, 150-liter bin after 150-liter bin filled with perfectly good food. Mm. I was then, you know, fast forward a little while, I was then working for a human rights organization. We did an event and it was catered by a group which were repurposing food. So similar to that food in bins that I was seeing in events, they were actually rescuing that food and repurposing it into an amazing spread. Now, speaking to them, I was, you know, shocked that actually somebody who was, you know, working in an impact industry or, you know, the, voluntary sector that I was very unaware about the scale and gravity of the issue of food waste. And that really like planted a seed. And essentially what it was, you know, what they were doing was amazing. You know, they were rescuing food from bins and transforming it into something amazing. But not everybody wants to go dumpster diving, right? Mm-hmm. So it was thinking, okay, well, you know, that's great what you're doing, but can we rescue any of that food before it hits the bin in the first place? And that there then sort of snowballed. We built a website, then an app, and next thing you know, Too Good To Go was born, and here we are in 13 countries saving a meal a second.
It is amazing, isn't it? Now, if you step back from the nitty-gritty of literally the meals that would otherwise be wasted, do you think that the most important drivers for change in terms of food waste are commercial or moral environmental issues? You know, do you think that the you know, people's own perception of what's right and wrong is enough to change things, or do you have to have companies like yours that are making money from doing it to really achieve tangible change?
I don't think it's one or the other. I think the pair go hand in hand. So what we have created is a commercial solution to food waste. Now, you know, there are many philanthropic, I can never say that word.
No, you're good.
organizations out there, you know, which want to do great things with their food waste. But at the same time, is that really challenging them to prevent food waste in the first place? So by having a commercial solution, we're able to have these conversations with large organizations and actually fundamentally change the way in which they previously perceive something like waste. At the same time, you know, we need to change the minds, behaviors, and attitudes of everyday consumers. You know, because if you know, we don't do that, you know, it's consumer trends which are ultimately also going to drive the way in which businesses respond to it. Not to mention, we need to then address things from a policy angle as well. So it's can we set targets, aggressive targets, to reduce food waste? Can we have, you know, policy in place which incentivizes businesses to reduce food waste and fundamentally change the way our food system operates? And, you know, what our platform like Too Good To Go is doing is, you know, we're able to engage both businesses and consumers at the same time.
Do you think that policy needs to come into it? You know, at some point, are we going to have to legislate or tax waste?
Whether it's, you know, I'm not necessarily saying there need to be punitive measures, but I think, you know, policy has to come in to actually change the way our food system operates. And we really have to stop producing so much food. You know, a third of all food that is produced ends up being wasted. You know, that just doesn't make sense.
But in a consumer-driven culture, is that likely or possible?
So we have this culture of abundance. So yes, it's about changing mindsets. You know, what I often say to people is, you know, we have this distinct lack of respect for food. You know, if we think to generations gone by, you know, nothing got wasted. Why? Because they valued food. Mm. You know, they were, you know, educated about.
Was it. That value, or is that a combination of value and just simple need? You couldn't waste food, whereas now, you know, certain things are dirt cheap, and you can waste food.
So
as well as the mindset, it was the simple need to do it. And you know, do we need to pressurize our you know, the people on the planet now to say, well, you need to, you know, you have to have the need to have food rather than just the want.
Right. Well, no, you do raise a valid point. You know, that need to not reduce food came out of necessity, but then that's still stayed with people. So if you think of, you know, people from the wartime generations who had to ration, you know, they were then able to not ration. Yet they knew the value of food, so they didn't start throwing everything away. You know, grandparents or parents who lived on the, you know, off the back of that don't have this wasteful notion because, you know, they have this intrinsic relationship with food that seems to have been lost through generations.
Mm. Do you think if we doubled the price of all food overnight, everything would change and we wouldn't waste food anymore?
I would wholeheartedly disagree with that. You know, I think, you know, when we look at the amount that we spend on food, you know, in the UK, the middle class are spending about 10% to 7% of our annual salary on groceries. but lower socioeconomic groups are spending upwards of 25%. Mm. So raising the price of food, you know, isn't going to, you know, it's going to have even more knock-on effects. I think it goes down to actually just changing this relationship with food, so we respect food and we ultimately fall in love with food again. It's about making throwing food away socially unacceptable rather than pushing the price of food up, because, you know, the implications of that are, you know, it's going to be creating another issue there as well.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. I think the respect and the love for food is the key thing, and the tricky bit is to get people to really care about that. And I'm not sure if anyone's quite found the solution yet, but maybe it's a little nudge along the way, and we'll finally get there. Just finally, then, can you tell me about your ambitions for Too Good To Go, and your concerns about the future? The negatives and the positives.
Sure. Well, at Too Good To Go, you know, we've always dreamed big. I mean, ever since the beginning, we've pretty much been a global organization. So we started there about eight of us, and we're now 480 of us operating in 13 countries around Europe. But what we want to do is, and what we strive to be, is a global solution for food waste. We really dream of a planet with no waste and no food waste in particular. So it is about becoming a global solution. So we want to be available to anyone and everyone, whether that's in a rural part of England or in other parts of the world. It really is about dreaming big, being this global solution to food waste.
And what worries you? What will happen if you don't achieve your aims?
Well, the worrying thing is the climate crisis. I mean, if we don't change, and we don't change the way that, you know, we engage with food, you know, there isn't going to be a planet for much longer. So I always refer back to the Drawdown report, which was the most comprehensive report on ways in which to mitigate some of the consequences of climate change. And reducing your food waste is the most impactful thing any individual can do. So that's why I'm so passionate about reducing food waste, because it's something so simple for us to do, and the impact of reducing our food waste, you know, is far more than things like reducing plastic.
And that's quite exciting, because it means that it's something that we could, you know, relatively easily achieve.
So easily. It's a very small step for people to take, and it's that there in itself. It's scary if we don't do it, but it's also exciting when we do.
Jamie Crummie, co-founder of Too Good To Go, thank you so much for your time.
Cheers. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.